That is study number 30 in our camp meeting in Australia, Tananda, 1992. Oh, 1993 we have. That is true. But it's a camp meeting, 1992, okay? Yeah. Okay. It's the camp meeting 1992. We leave this title, okay? So we will now turn to some statements which I promised you, but I didn't have them with me. I quickly printed them out, which tell that the medical missionary work is the right arm of the spiritual work. Again, let's read this. Again and again, I have been instructed that the medical missionary work is to bear the same relation to the work of the third angel's message that the arm and hand bear to the body. Under the direction of the divine head, they are to work unitedly in preparing the way for the coming of Christ. The right arm of the body of truth is to be constantly active, constantly at work, and God will strengthen it. But it is not to be made the body. At the same time, the body is not to say to the arm, I have no need of thee. The body has need of the arm in order to do active, aggressive work. Both have their appointed work, and each will suffer great loss if worked independently of each other. That is from Christian Service, page 134. A very interesting statement, isn't it? Christian Service, page 134. But let us again come to the context of that statement. So Sister White here makes this point very clear, that the medical missionary work is to bear the same relation to the work of the third angel's message that the arm and hand bear to the body. It has to be very active, but it has not to become the body. They both must work unitedly. If they become independent, the work will suffer great loss. Let's turn to another statement. That is from manuscript releases. I just selected a few now quickly. I could read many more, but these few shall be enough. The Lord desires that with the conference shall be connected the ability He has given to Dr. So-and-so. He wants His people to make the most of the ability He has bestowed on His servants. He did not wish the medical missionary work to be separated from the gospel work, or the gospel work separated from the medical missionary work. These are to blend. The medical missionary work is to be regarded as the pioneer work. It is to be the means of breaking down prejudice, as the right arm is to open doors for the gospel message. In other words, as the people see how the medical missionary work works, how they see how they get freedom from diseases, they will begin to learn how they get freedom from sin. That is the very purpose of the medical missionary work. I think that's enough. I could read more statements, but they are all to the same effect, really. If you desire them, I can give it to you later. Or print out even more if you want to. Now, all this was just to confirm what we want to study now, and this is that the same work that happens in the spiritual work happens also in the physical. So let us now see what or how God works in the physical world. Now, with disease, it is similar with sin. Very similar. In fact, these two things can be very much compared. Sin is a real master, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sickness is a real master. And if somebody suffers under sickness, he would give all the world if he could be free from it. But it's not so easy. You struggle and struggle and you really feel it's a master which holds you firmly in his grip. And the same thing is true with sin. So here we have already a very perfect parallel, the one for the other. So, like for the sin, we are trying to get better, but don't. So very often people receive certain instructions what they should do and what they should not do in order to get help. And that's like the law that comes to them. These instructions might not be wrong in themselves, but people find that they cannot get help out of it. And they go from one doctor to another, from one natural path to another, and so forth, and all the result is they try hard, but they fail. They try and fail, try and fail. Can you see the parallel? That is right. It is trying out several methods and with several schools, which you find in this world. Okay. And all this fails until the person comes to capitulate. Now the paralytic at the pool of Bethesda, he was really such a person, wasn't he? For 38 years he had tried again and again to get healing from the waters, but he had failed until he had to capitulate and say, I can't get healing in this way. I must get it in a different way. And this different way was Christ, who is the only one who could really heal him from that disease. And when Christ healed him, by faith, well, he made a covenant. That all happened very quickly, really. He made a covenant in himself that Christ was his healer, because when Christ said, stand up, take your bags, and go, in that moment he decided he would obey Christ. And that was like making a covenant with Christ that he would be his doctor, even though it happened very quick. But can you see this contained in there? Likewise, it was by faith that he was healed, as we have studied this week. So faith and the covenant with God, they are two very important elements of getting that healing. Now we must admit, however, that not everybody is as sick as the paralytic was. Not everybody is such a desperate case that he is on the brink of death. Most of us are feeling quite well, aren't we? We have no pains, we can jump around, we can hear and see. Okay, we have little ailments, but they don't matter so much. They don't hurt us really, and they don't hinder us. And these little things we don't take much notice in, so we are quite well. And because we are, we do not want to go to the doctor. Of course we wouldn't go to an earthly doctor when we are quite well, would we? But we should go to another doctor, our heavenly doctor. Have you heard of preventive medicine? It's a very important field, and that applies also to our heavenly doctor. Let's read about preventive medicine, shall we? Again, in Exodus chapter 15, verse 26. And said, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and wilt do that which is right in his sight, and wilt give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. Now what has the Lord promised? Has he promised to deliver us out of sickness or to prevent sickness of coming to us? The first he has promised to prevent, hasn't he? Therefore, when should we go to the doctor? Before we get sick, that's right. In fact, we should acknowledge that we are all sick, really. There was a time in the history of men when there were no sick people on the world, and they became sick only after 2,000 years of continued sinning. And today, who dies not of any sickness? Who does not die of a sickness? Practically no one, really. And that really shows that every person is sick. And we may feel quite well, but we have a diseased body, really. I think we need to admit this. To a lesser or greater degree, of course. Now, in most cases to a lesser degree. But we have a need of a doctor. Really a need. In our physical bodies as well as in our minds. Alone for the cause of preventing. And so, we go to our doctor and we make a covenant with him that he will be our doctor in future. I am the Lord that healeth thee. Now that covenant includes much. It really says, in future, I give my trust not in men anymore, but in you. And even should I die, still will I trust in you. That is a covenant not easy to be made. But you know, this kind of covenant we make also in the spiritual realm, don't we? In other words, before we go to baptism, we think it really through. Can we be faithful to God even when it comes face to face with death? If we say, no, we don't want that, then we shouldn't better give this testimony of baptism. Of course, we may not feel strong enough at the moment to face death, really. And that is understandable. But by faith, we should be able to say, the Lord will strengthen me in that time. So when I face death, I will bravely drink the cup, as John the Baptist did and as Jesus did. I will bravely do this because he will give me strength at that time. And when I by faith can really make such a covenant, then it is a very good covenant. And the same thing I do when I make God my doctor. And in fact, the ideal situation would be if together with my rebirth experience, I also have my experience of health, of healing. So after I make this covenant, which can be at the same time as the covenant that I will not try to gain righteousness by my own works, and at the same time I make the covenant, I will not gain health by my own works or by the works of other men. I will gain it only by making God my doctor. So if I make this covenant, then the next step is in the spiritual, it's a rebirth experience. What is it in the physical?
Health.
Yes, that's right. The Lord actually will give us the gift of health. He will give us that which is an antidote to sickness, really. And if we would make that experience at a very early stage, if a child would make it from his earliest moments, it would be as healthy as Jesus was, without ever becoming sick. That would be the case. Now, we have studied the fact that a child, when it is born again from its earliest moments, never needs to sin, like Jesus never sinned. So likewise, a child never needs to become sick, as Jesus never was sick. Was he ever sick?
No, not even a disciple.
That's right. Nothing. He was perfect health. It is true that Jesus, as a result of his suffering in the wilderness, where he fasted 40 days, was emaciated. Is this the right word? Haggard? Yeah. But still he was healthy. There was no virus in him and things like this. They just couldn't find hold in his body. That's right. And he ate the same food as the others, didn't he? He ate fish and bread. He slept in the same huts as they did. He clothed himself with the same clothes that he did. Certainly Jesus would be a clean person. He would look for hygiene and things like this. But then at the same time, it's possible only in a limited degree when you are living in a poor environment, isn't it? His own family feared for his life, but this was the result of his suffering when he gave himself for mankind, wasn't it?
Yeah, but now in this place, he's still a Nazarene.
His disciples and his family. Yeah, this we read this in Ministry of Healing. Yeah, that was during his public ministry though.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Not during
the
suffering.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a great night, long night.
And then he prayed and was restored again. Good. Now let us see very clearly that as we make a rebirth experience, so we can make health experience. Which means
deliverance
from the power of sickness. And that is an antidote to sickness in itself. Now that does not mean that we never become sick again, as it does not mean that we never sin again once we made our rebirth experience. We do not need to sin, true, but because of wrong concepts and things like this in the human nature, we still have a work of reformation to do. And so likewise, because of a lifelong usage to unhealthful practices and living under the power of sickness, there's still a work to do. And for this reason, it is well possible that we can still become sick. In fact, the later in our life we make this experience, the more work is to be done after God gives us the gift of life or the gift of health. The earlier we do it, the easier it goes. And as we said already, if parents, understanding that principle, would not only pray for the rebirth of their child from its earliest moments, but also for the gift of health for the child from the earliest moments, that child would be perfect sinless and perfect healthy. There would be no disease like with Jesus. That is the promise. It is unfortunate that we cannot realize this, because we are rather old now and come to this realization. But it is not too late to come to God and make a definite experience in this respect.
Can we give them to their mother?
Pardon?
another can have this experience and be born again and the same day there's this disease.
Yeah, that's right. Now when we preach the message, we should always keep in mind that our burden is not only their souls but also their bodies of the people. They must learn to make God their doctor, not only their righteousness but also their health. And as the people learn this, they will get a perfect illustration of what it means to be freed from sin. Now, without the power of God, we cannot teach them this. I think you see this very clearly. We need the power of God to be true medical missionary workers as well as true workers for the salvation from the sin problem. Okay, this is once in a lifetime that we make God our doctor. And once we make it, then it is important that we stay faithful to this. That is, when we come in a crisis, that we do not run away from the school and quickly go to the world to get our problems fixed. It is very important that whenever a problem in our body springs up, that the first reaction is, go to the doctor. And who is my doctor when I made him my doctor? God, of course. Go to the doctor immediately. That's the first act. Go to the doctor. Before you even think of applying anything, go to the doctor.
Because he is merciful. He doesn't like to be suffering.
That's right, he's merciful. Furthermore, he is all wise. All wise. That is, he is somebody who really knows what the problem is. He can make a diagnosis that is perfect, better than any other doctor can. And he can prescribe the medicine that is the exact right one, better than anyone else can. Because Jesus suffered for us, he feels with us. He feels when we feel suffering, and for this reason he is merciful. He will answer our prayer. Now, in the process of reformation, we have learned that there are two kinds of work. I hope it does not become complicated. Now, if it does, please tell me. But some explanation needs to be given. Now, when it comes to the deliverance from a sin problem after we are born again, there are two kinds of problems. There's one problem where we just need control. And there's another problem where we need to cut off the sin completely. Let's take an example. Now, concerning appetite, this is something that definitely needs control. We cannot cut off appetite from our life. Because if we would have no appetite anymore, we would not want to eat and then we would die. So appetite is something good in itself. It is only perverted because it wants only sweet sugar things, maybe, or it wants too much. Whatever the case is, that perversion needs to go away and we need to control our appetite. And so there are areas in our life which needs control. You can say everything that is a part of the human nature and which is not sin in itself needs proper control. But there are things in our life which need to be cut off. If we have the tendency not to be honest, that needs to be cut off from our life. If we have the tendency to steal maybe, that has to be cut off completely. And so forth. So there are two problems and two different fixes for that problem. Problem number one, if we just have a lack of control over human tendency, then we must really exercise the willpower to control it. And there are other areas where we cannot control it. We cannot control dishonesty, to just not be dishonest to certain kind of people and to others we are, that is not working. That thing has to go away completely. So things have to be cut off and things have to be controlled. Is this understandable? Okay. Number one, cut off. Number two, control. Now, in the work of cutting off a sin from our nature, I think we understand very well that we in ourselves do not have the power to cut it off by our willpower. We cannot, through sheer willpower, really take away sins, even not after we are born again. It does not work. Our willpower does not have that function even. God alone has the power to cut sin away from our life. I think that is something we realize, isn't it? We recognize. He alone has the power to cut sin away from our life. It's very important to see this. If we don't see it, if we think we still can overcome this with our willpower, then we find ourselves in a similar situation as before we were born again. Even though we are born again, but in the sphere of that sin, we are like this. We try and we fail, we try and we fail, we try and we fail. Until we capitulate and say, Lord, you must cut off the sin from my life. Only you can cut it off. And then we, by faith, accept his gift, which is deliverance from that problem. It is really, in many respects, the same procedure as our rebirth experience. Only that in our rebirth experience we had the principal deliverance from the sin master, and now we get deliverance from a certain single sin problem.
What about infilling this life power and like infilling with Christ?
That's right.
What is missing now? It's destroyed.
Good, thank you. Okay, so after this is cut off, the Lord then will fill in righteousness. But he alone can make this exchange. He only can take away that sin and fill us instead with righteousness. But when it comes now to a problem of control, we have to cooperate with God. In other words, the Lord will not exercise an arbitrary power over us. We have to cooperate with him in our with our willpower. And this point is also emphasized very much in the spirit of prophecy. I want to point to you to a statement in Minister of Healing again, on page 176, where it says, the tempted one needs to understand the true force of the will. This is the governing power in the nature of man, the power of decision, of choice. Everything depends on the right action of the will. Desires for goodness and purity are right so far as they go. But if we stop here, they avail nothing. Many will go down to ruin while hoping and desiring to overcome the evil propensities. They do not yield the will to God. They do not choose to serve him. God has given us power of choice. It is ours to exercise. We cannot change our hearts. We cannot control our thoughts, our impulses, our affections. We cannot make ourselves pure, fit for God's service, but we can choose whom choose to serve God. We can give him our will. Then he will work in us to will and to do according to his pleasure. Thus our whole nature will be brought under the control of Christ. Through the right exercise of the will, an entire change may be made in life. By yielding up the will to Christ, we ally ourselves with divine power. We receive strength from above to hold a steadfast, a pure and noble life. A life of victory over appetite and lust is possible to everyone who will unite his weak, wavering human will to the omnipotent, unwavering will of God. Those who are struggling against the power of appetite should be instructed in the principles of healthful living. They should be shown that violation of the laws of health by creating diseases, diseased condition and unnatural cravings lays the foundation of the liquor habit. Only by living in obedience to the principles of health can they hope to be freed from the craving for unnatural stimulants. Then it goes on to say those who are endeavoring to reform should be provided with employment. We won't read on here because that 176. So can you see now that there is a work for us to do as well, especially in the area of controlling our nature, our human nature? True, it is God's power which enables us to do this, the power that he filled us with, especially at the rebirth, and which grows from day to day as we go to him in prayer. But still we have to cooperate in that work. And this cooperation is a privilege. The Lord would not take away this privilege from us. He would say, cooperate diligently with me and you shall live. And so we will live and grow from day to day. Now the same is true in our body. And the body, mind you, is an illustration for the soul. So likewise, we have two kind of problems in our body, principally. There is one problem where we have an actual death of an organ, that is not recovered by the natural process of healing, of the healing powers of nature. For example, if we have cancer, we understand very well that the body, through his own powers, does not fix that problem. He may limit that problem to a certain degree, but he cannot overcome it. There's nothing in the world that takes away cancer, really. Nothing. Even though some would claim that there is, but if it has really taken hold of the person, you can't. We have other problems. Leprosy was such a thing. Leprosy is the actual death of an organ, isn't it? You have liver cirrhosis, another problem, where the liver is already eaten up, away it is, and so forth. So there are things where you can say, here is death has started already, in an organ or in a limited part of the body. Now when that has happened, who alone can restore that life? That is very important to see. God alone can restore that life. Therefore, without God's creative work, nothing can be done. Except keeping up the body as it is. And that is the point that I wanted to show you as well, which Paul makes so clear. He says, the law cannot give life. It cannot give life. And the application of law, even in the physical realm, cannot give life to the body. It just can't. If my body, take an extreme case, if the body is dead, how many treatments can make him alive? Obviously none. If the body is dead, you can treat him as you want, he doesn't come alive. You're thinking maybe now of first aid and things like this, but, you know, then the body is not really dead yet. It's on the process of death, and then they try to breathe again into him and revive him again. That is not so. If a body is really dead, every medical person will give up. There's none who will try to make some treatments on a dead person. That is very obvious, so obvious that there's no question about it. And what is true for the whole body is true also when an organ is dead. But while no law can give life to a dead body, who can? That's right, Jesus can. He alone is the life giver. He alone can restore a dead body and a dead organ to life. So when we would have a problem here that needs a complete restoration of life, only God can do this. We even can't add anything to it. You can't, if there's a dead body, you can't add to him any treatment in order to make him whole again. If a person is blind, has no eyes anymore, or the eyes are completely dead, how much treatment will make the man see?
None.
It's only the power of God which can give light to the eyes again, which give life to the eyes. There's no law that can do this. Now you may question, why did Jesus then make some treatment? He put clay on the blind man's eye, didn't he? And told him to wash in the pool of Siloam. Well, yeah, we come back to this point. Jesus sometimes used natural treatments to give an important lesson. And that lesson we will study soon. But first of all, let us see very clearly, it was not the clay that would heal or would give life to the blind man's eyes. Or do you believe that? Certainly not. Otherwise, we would today, when a blind man comes, would put clay on his eyes and would say, that's the cure. But it's not. Fun? We come back to this point. This is part. But first of all, let us see very clearly. If an organ is dead, there is only one power that can do anything, and that is God's power. And we are as helpless as though we did nothing. And often we have to do nothing. But there are these other problems. That is the control or the keeping up of the life that is there. And the keeping up of the life that is there, for this reason the law is given. In other words, God has given the law to preserve life. He has not given the law to give life. He can't. That is not the purpose of the law. But he has given the law in order to preserve it, preserve that what is there. And in that area, man has to cooperate with God. And then in that area, we need a lot of skill and understanding. That is the reason why each believer really should become acquainted with his body. We all should understand some basics about the anatomy and the physiology of our body. And it's frightening how little we are educated in that sphere. It is frightening how little the people are educated in this sphere. They trust all to the doctor and they say, he knows everything about my bones. He shall fix them. Now we shall have an understanding as well. And I tell you, if I had children, which I would have to educate at home, one of the major subjects would be anatomy and physiology. I would make sure of that, really. That is necessary. Now, when you go to the doctor of the world today, what will he tell you? He will tell you, give me the case, let me deal with you, and you do what I tell you. Isn't that so? Mm-hmm. But if you would go to a true medical missionary worker who is really a physician according to the order of God, let's say so, what would he tell you if you go to him? Well, the first thing he would do, he would tell you, let's go down on our knees and give God the problem. Because I have no wisdom and you have no wisdom, so we must give God the problem if you haven't done this already. So you first would pray together with him, and then this person would explain you something about your body. He would not say, trust me, I will make everything for you, just obey me. No. He would show you cause and effects, and by talking with him you would get a much greater understanding about your own body. It's a pleasure to talk to such people because they won't rule over you and just prescribe something. They will explain you, and then more or less you are challenged then. In other words, those people, they won't make much treatments. You have to do it yourself, whatever you have to do in order to deal with that problems where you have to apply the law. So the law has its place in the true medical missionary work. That is, natural treatments, not drugs, but natural treatments have their work in the true medical missionary work, where we have to cooperate with God. And that problems where we have to cooperate with Him. And that things where our body has to be supported so that the natural powers of nature can get to work. And the appliance of water, the appliance of rest, of exercise, and things like these are very important and essential. And again, let me emphasize this point to you. If there would be a true physician in that movement who understands these principles, he would give us an explanation of the body. He would be more an educator than just a treatment executor. He would also, of course, be an assistant, like a nurse, in treatments, if that is necessary, if I can't apply it myself. Really, the task of the true physician is more that of a nurse, because the Lord is the doctor.
He can't prescribe anything. The doctor is the doctor of prescribing anything.
That's right. I should explain you some cases later, but before I do, let me quickly tell you what is really the role of the natural remedies, yeah? I write them down, natural remedies. They have definitely their place after we have made God our doctor. Before we have made God our doctor, the natural remedies will only turn us away from God. That sounds strange, doesn't it? But so it is. Why? Because before I make God my doctor and I apply natural remedies, I will put all my trust in them. And then they become an idol. And when they are an idol, they turn me away from God as my doctor. Now the problem is that many who apply natural remedies at the same time believe in a God. And because they do, they claim that they say they do everything according to God as God wants. Yes, of course, God wants natural remedies. But they idolize the remedies. And how? And how does this happen? It happens in that way that, for example, a person says, I have the remedy for all problems. Come to me. I give it to you. take a simplified example now, garlic. Garlic will make it. Garlic will heal you. You have a cold? Take garlic. You have this? Take garlic. You have this? Take garlic. In other words, they won't even consider praying before. They will immediately say, take garlic. And in this way, it's an oversimplified statement now what I make, but you know what I mean. And in that way, the natural remedies stand between the true doctor and the patient. They stand between. In other words, the man looks to the remedies instead to God. Now, what is the place for natural remedies in the true medical missionary work? They are the same place as is the earthen vessel, the messenger. The messenger, as a man, is nothing special, is he? But in him is a vessel. In him is a treasure, I mean. And the treasure is the truth, is the power of God. And so likewise, God uses nature as an instrument in order to restore us, bring us to restoration. But he is the source. And every true medical missionary worker will understand this. And he will direct our attention to the source. Very obvious, does this become in the healing of the blind man? Because the blind man would never say, clay is it what healed me, would he? What did the blind man say? It was Jesus who healed me. He would not even think much about clay. He would say it was Jesus who healed me. Likewise, when Paul was healing, and and there was such power around Paul that they only needed to touch his aprons and handkerchiefs, and they were healed. Now, would they say the aprons and the handkerchiefs made it? No, they would say the power of God made it. Of course, today people have perverted the truth, which means they now believe in relics. And you see, the faith in natural remedies can be the same faith as in relics, as though these things had power. But we need to see very clearly that these things are only poor earthen vessels. And the real healing always, in every instance, comes from God. And every true medical missionary worker will teach the people that and will make the people very clear. So they never will come to him and say, he's a great man, he can heal everything. No, they will understand more clearly how to go to God. In other words, a true physician is a true educator who leads the people away from himself, away from the remedies, to the Creator, to the Savior, to the source of all healing. And if a person does not have that qualification, then you can say he's not working according to the line as Jesus worked. And that is the reason why some people who have been in our message and have been natural paths have not liked the message. They have always drawn the attention of the people to themselves. They have always given the air around them that they were great persons and that everybody must come to them if they have problems. Now, when they heard that God is the source and that they are only little insignificant instruments, they didn't like that anymore. That is so. It's like with ministers. As the minister in England said, I was always used to stand in the pulpit and have all the people listen to me, and now suddenly I'm an insignificant person who sits in the last row. But he overcame that pride. And likewise, we have doctors in our movement, actual doctors who studied the medical profession, overcame that pride, and they have accepted the true message and are going about very, very careful in that. And I must say, I trust them, because they really, whenever you go to them, they turn your mind to Christ first. When you go to them, to their praxis, they don't have an actual praxis, but when you go to their home, they will first pray with you. And then they will show you causes and effects and so forth. And this is something we should all aim to. And most of all, we should aim to the power without which the true message, medical message, is a lifeless message, really. The knowledge of natural remedies alone is nothing. We must have the power of God. And only as you have this power and the knowledge of our anatomy and physiology can we do that work that the Lord designs us to do. So there's quite something to do, isn't there? But our time is over. And the tape is empty.